the Election Protection Coalition, I've been running our tapes from our meetings, which usually happen on Monday, but today we did a special session on Thursday to be live on PRN. We're going to go for a full 57 minutes on PRN. Our grassroots or Election Protection Coalition, or as we know it and love it, GREEP, is going to go for a full hour and a half. We got a ton to talk about. If you're tuned in at PRN and want to stay with us at GREEP at the full hour and a half session, just go to Election Protection 2024 and get the link, and you can rejoin us after 57 minutes. But we got a ton to talk about today. It's great to see all our beautiful friends here. I'm on Zoom looking at the pictures of all our buddies, and we have been conducting these Zoom calls since the summer. This is number 34, and boy, do we have tons to talk about today, primarily on election protection, but also I don't think I've ever sat in front of a TV set longer than I did yesterday. I should have had a popcorn machine. I mean, just watching these fascist lunatics running around the Capitol building was the experience of, I hope it's only once, frankly. I just saw today, by the way, that one of the people who went into the Capitol building took the podium from somewhere, one of the buildings, and put it up on eBay, for God's sakes. I mean, do these people assume that we do not have a police force in this country? I mean, the bids for this podium were up to $100,000
already. He took Pelosi's podium, Harvey.
Pelosi's podium, right? So, you know, it's unreal. So listen, what we're going to do today with the Green Power and Wellness Show and with our GREEP Zoom, this is a special session, of course, is that we are going to start off talking so we don't lose track, because things happen so fast in this country. We're going to spend the first half hour, 40 minutes, talking about this incredibly great victory that happened in Georgia, where not one, but two U.S. senators were elected with a grassroots, unprecedented grassroots organizing campaign. We're going to talk to Christian Nunez from the National Organization of Women, with Andrea Miller from People Demanding Action, and with Ray McClendon from the NAACP in Atlanta, about how this amazing election was organized from the bottom up, from the grassroots. I mean, all of us for years and years and years have been, talking the talk about grassroots, bottom-up organizing, and here it just absolutely happened in Georgia. It is truly astounding what was done there, and we'll go for a half hour, 40 minutes on that, and make sure that we cover the territory and don't lose our ability to celebrate this amazing victory and to learn what we need to learn from it, because the grassroots in Georgia, with Andrea Miller, with Ray McClendon, with Stacey Abrams, with Emily and the scrutineers, it was all done right. And it worked, for God's sakes. I mean, one thing people have lost track of in Georgia in this double election is that this was Georgia, for God's sakes. This is where the Ku Klux Klan was founded. And, you know, all these years later, we have a double election, and the state of Georgia, home of the KKK, sends a Jewish guy and a black guy to the U.S. Senate to oust the dictatorship of Mitch McConnell. I mean, it's a truly astounding event, and we need to understand completely from soup to nuts about how this was done. So we will, we're going to talk, of course, about what happened in the Capitol. I have a piece with Bob Fetrakis, who will be joining us at reader-supported news, demanding that Trump immediately get out of there. I know once we get into that, it's going to go wild. So what we will do is proceed to the top of the hour, and then we'll switch over from PRN. But in the meantime, we'll go at least a half hour or 40 minutes on what has happened in Georgia and how this incredible turnaround, unprecedented turnaround in U.S. history, has happened. And I want to say there are very few things that I've heard in the last few days that give me greater satisfaction than to hear the term Mitch McConnell, minority leader of the U.S. Senate. I mean, God help us. That's just such a relief. So there is one thing we do need to discuss. These calls, we have put a ton of time into North Carolina, and a lot of organizing happened in North Carolina, and it didn't go the way we thought it would go. Now, we wanted it to go. Now, one of the major factors in North Carolina, which is completely out of our control, was that the leading Democratic candidate, who was ahead in the polls, Cal Cunningham, got caught sexting or texting sexual messages to a woman who was not his wife. And for all our hard work, all the money we poured in, all the time and effort, you know, that hurt us. So I want to turn it over to my co-conspirator, Joel Siegel, who is in North Carolina and who's brought us Ray McClendon and so many other great grassroots organizers, to say a bit about what happened in North Carolina, and then to turn it over to Ray. I will up front say that we will have our meeting on Monday, and we're going to have a tremendous report. If you want gratification for the power of grassroots organizing, we are going to have a report from Michigan, from Jan Bandor. We put a lot of resources into Michigan. I am a U of M graduate, and what has happened in Michigan, which is way under the radar screen, is that enormous advances have been made to end gerrymandering and to really democratize the state of Michigan. And that's one reason we are nonpartisan here, but that's the reason that Wisconsin over here went, I don't know, 20,000 votes for Biden, and Pennsylvania over here went, I don't know, 20, 30,000 votes for Biden. And in the middle, Michigan went 150,000 votes for Biden. I mean, there's a qualitative difference. So we're not going to talk about it today. We will talk about it Monday. You will be deeply gratified to hear the victories that we've won in Michigan against gerrymandering and vote fraud. It's truly astounding. Okay? So do join us on Monday for our regular time. This, I got to admit, when we set this meeting up today, it was essentially focused to talk about Georgia. We had no idea there would be an attempted coup d'etat in Washington. So we will talk about that in the second part of the Zoom call. Let me turn it over to Joel. He's going to turn it over to Ray McClendon and to Christian Nunez and Andrea Miller when she joins us. Okay, buddy. Joel, take it away, please. Joel Siegel.
I want to reiterate that I think you should maintain your haircut.
I don't have any choice, but I certainly will.
Well, you got more hair than I do, and you're 10 years older. So anyway, Happy New Year, everybody. Good to see everyone's face. Brother Ray with the victory. Do we got Andrew Miller? Do we have Andrew?
I don't see Andrew on yet. We do have Christian Nunez. But let's start with Ray.
Yeah, well, I want to first thank Ray for saving the planet and saving America from fascism and 4 more years of insanity in the place that I worked for many years that I do love. So before I start with Ray, the point I wanted to make about North Carolina is I'm very close to Cal Cunningham, a great guy. Not going to talk about what Cal did, but I am going to say that if you look at I think we should call this the Georgia miracle. And I hope, Harvey, that you can write an article together with Ray and Andrea, because people in other states are going to have to understand what happened. Ray organized 19 NAACPs, 19. And if you look at the vote in Georgia, and Ray can talk about this more, but what was the determining factor was Black rural voters. And that's where Ray was organizing. The NAACP was organizing not just in Metro Atlanta, but all across Georgia. But as a Jewish guy, I'm still trying to figure out how did an African-American and a Jewish senator get how did they get elected in Georgia? It's kind of kind of blows me away. And it's called Organizing is what it's called, right? It's called Ray McClendon, and it's called Andrea Miller, and all these other folks, you know, Stacey Abrams. But yeah, and I think that if North Carolina had implemented the Georgia GOTV model and the Georgia anti-voter suppression model, there is a possibility that North Carolina could have been a blue state. And so, and Ray's going to talk about the campaign, but what we've decided to do is figure out a way to replicate the Georgia model in every swing state, you know, that we have. And in terms of the campaign that we're going to usher as a coalition, Ray's going to talk about that. But without GOTV and paying people in the black community to do precinct work, Democratic Party will spend money on commercials. I think that the midterms are at risk for going red again. And but I think the midterms could possibly turn around if we implement the McClendon model. The McClendon model. So now, Ray, I mean, it really was a miracle, you know, and everybody who's here who helped give money to Atlanta NAACP, I tip my glasses off to you. So thank you very much. So, Ray, why don't you go ahead, and then I'll call on Christian afterwards. But, Ray, why don't you explain what you feel like you did that worked, and what are the lessons learned, and then the campaign, and then we'll turn it over to Christian.
Hey, thanks, Joel. And it's a pleasure to be with everyone tonight. We really, really appreciate all of the interest, all of the effort, all of the support, both direct human resource support as well as financial support, and certainly
Joel Siegel.
Thoughts and prayers that came along with that for us to pull off this astounding victory. Here, no one would have thought that this was possible just a few months ago, but it really related to the combined efforts of us all. And it was based upon collaboration amongst a variety of folks across the entire country, but focused on grassroots efforts with a ground game across the entire state. So as Joel mentioned, we focused on everybody doing what they could do well, but then communicating with all of the other groups that have been doing grassroots activity and organizing over not just 1 year, 2 years, but really over 4, 5, 6, some places even 10 or 12 years. And what we did was we came together so that we could be efficient and effective and communicating with one another so that we weren't stumbling over each other, but we were supporting one another. Let me give you an example. In the past, we would have all of these different groups, whether they be operating in the black community, that would be stumbling over one another, where you would have different black fraternities and sororities called the Divine Nine or the National Panhellenic Council. They would be doing their own thing, and then the NAACP would be doing its own thing, and you would have 100 black men, 100 black women, the churches, et cetera. And there would be many weekends and occasions where we would literally be on different corners, in the same shopping center trying to do, voter registration or get out the vote efforts, et cetera. So, a couple of years ago, after what happened in the Stacey Abrams race, we decided that we were going to come together and create a collaboration. And that collaboration was going to be focused on different elements for what everyone felt they could do well themselves. And the NAACP Atlanta decided that what we would do would be to organize NAACP branches around the state where there were 77% of the black voters. And that we would concentrate on those, and that we would join in with other groups from around the state, all of those different African-American entities, which are the key influencers in every one of those towns to create grassroots efforts. We then joined with the more rural groups, and shout out, and I know Andrea is going to talk about this when she gets on, that we would identify those groups. But the point of it was that we were all talking to one another. And thanks to Harvey and you guys for really putting Andrea and Center for Common Ground together with us, because that really put a turbocharge on what we were able to do, and we complemented one another well. And so all of these groups coming together then allowed us to provide more resources directly into these communities where the influencers who were known, with people who could gather resources such as us with the Atlanta NAACP, working with groups like you all, could then push those resources into those communities in order to maximize our effectiveness. Now, this started in the general election. And what we did was put it on steroids for the runoff. And that is what made the difference, is us all joining together with all of these other groups that were operating in the state. Black Voters Matter, as well, was a critical component here. Fair Fight Georgia with Stacey Abrams. But we all teamed up together in order to make the collaboration work. I was on phone calls and Zoom calls every night of the week with my other comrades, with the NAACP, and with all of these other organizations to make sure it worked. But it was grassroots ground game that made the difference. The Democratic Party and a lot of the PACs spent an awful lot of money that was really just poured down the drain, because the ads canceled each other out. People got numb to them. What really worked to get the vote out in the Black community was the ground game that we put in place from all of these organizations. And that's what reflected a higher turnout in many of these areas for the runoff, which is unheard of to have higher turnout in the runoff than you did in a presidential general election. The Black vote was critical. New voters were critical. There were over 115,000 new voters who voted in the runoff that did not vote in the general election itself, which is an amazing statistic. So kudos to all of you. Thanks for all of the support. But the lesson learned from this is that we need to go back to some of the fundamentals, the old school methods. And when you really want to hit these communities of color in all of these swing states, we can make a difference by doing grassroots ground game. And I think that's what was the difference. And particularly, the final point is, it made a big difference on election day. We know that we had banked a lot of votes, and we outperformed during early voting and mail-in voting. We know that. We had done that in the general, and we replicated that in the runoff. We knew that the other side was going to come out en masse for the day of voting. And so we worked tirelessly that very last weekend, canvassing and having events with music and food over that weekend, and on that Monday, getting the music industry, which is big in Georgia, the hip hop and rap industry out, in order to make sure that we got the maximum vote out on the Tuesday. Finally, the lines were short. We continue to update people during the week, during the day, on the fact that the lines were short, and if you hadn't voted, you could still get out. And so we matched the intensity of our opponents on day of, so that we didn't fall into the trap that happened in South Carolina with the senatorial race there, which many people in South Carolina will tell you that Harrison likely lost on election day in that turnout, when he was doing extremely well in the run-up. So with that said, we thank you once again, and I'll entertain any questions while we wait on Andrea.
Well, we have Myra with a hand. I want to ask you real quick, and then we'll get Myra's question in. What specifically was the ground game? You went to shopping centers. You knocked on doors. You did phone calling. What else did you do?
We did text banking. Center for Common Ground, Reclaim Our Vote, has a great texting platform. They have a great phone banking platform. Their platforms were superior to the platforms that we had used in the past, with higher contact rates and ease of use. So those helped out tremendously. The other things that we did was that because of the financial support that we got from folks like on this call and others, we were able to have events. What our folks respond to is to have events and happenings in the community that generate a positive feeling and get folks' attention. So we had RVs going through the community that had been skinned with Get Out and Vote. We had music trucks that were going through the community with music. We had events on the weekends next to weekend voting locations, where we would have food, music, and all of the different groups, the sororities, fraternities, all of them would come out and we would make it an event. We did that each and every weekend. We did that some. We had a basketball event where there was basketball in the paint with Ossoff. So there were all kinds of innovative events that we had in the community. We did several food distribution events as well, where we met people where they were, knowing that food insecurity is a big issue in our community. We teamed up with some different food companies, Walmart and some others, and we delivered food to people during the pandemic and talked about voting as a part of it as well.
Fantastic. So is there any chance, Myra, I'll get you in a sec, is there any chance that you can make an alliance with the Democratic Party so that they can figure out, after all these years, how to do grassroots organizing, at least give you some of the money that they you know, I mean, come on. What more could you have done with the $100 million they blew?
I don't really trust them that much.
Okay.
You're absolutely right, Harvey, and there needs to be, I don't have any problem saying it since I'm not a part of the in crowd on this. There absolutely needs to be a change of leadership in the top of the party, and they need to rethink what they're doing to have grassroots effort, and it needs to be a year-round effort.
It can really be reformed.
Okay, a real good Myra Reason in L.A. You got a question for Ray here?
For Ray, I do. And we're all celebrating the great win in the runoff for Ossoff and Warnock, but I was disappointed to see that even though he came very close, Daniel Blackman was not elected over Bubba. And I'm wondering if you have any insights into why that happened. And obviously a lot more attention was given to the Senate runoff. But I'm wondering if any of those ballots can be cured, if there's any chance at all that Bubba might somehow overcome that his defeat. I know that there were a few, it was like 49% to 50, I think, in the end. Yeah. And is there a chance that he may run again for one? There are several districts. Is it?
Well, and that's a great question, and thank you for that. And we were very disappointed in that. We had them run as a team. And I say we had strongly encouraged that they be branded and marketed as a team, which they were. Still, he was always third on the marquee, so to speak. And so he didn't get the visibility, but we were strong to impress that in our communities. And I think he just fell a little bit short. But there's a broader issue here that needs to be addressed. And it comes back to some of the things that Joel and Harvey have been talking about here. This is one of the vestiges of voter suppression from the Jim Crow era. You know, we have, with the Public Service Commission, we have a situation where you have to live in a region, but then you get voted on statewide. So that automatically puts people of color at a disadvantage. And I'll put it to you this way as an example. Suppose that our late dear friend John Lewis, who represented the 5th Congressional District, he of course had to live in that district, but what if he had to run statewide for that congressional district? Guess what? We would have very few Black congressmen if that were the case. So that's what we have with the Public Service Commission. We are a part of a lawsuit right now challenging that setup, which has created a Public Service Commission that has 5 Republicans, has not had a Democrat on the committee since either 1992 or 1996. So, you know, that is inherently suppressive it's a unique form of gerrymandering.
All right, very interesting. You know what we're going to have to do is write an article up, Ray, with you and Bob Fitrakis and everybody else on how exactly you did it in Georgia. I mean, for the state of Georgia to put a Black guy and a Jewish guy in the U.S. Senate from the foundation, from the roots of the Ku Klux Klan is quite amazing. Stay on with us. We'll get to Henny Tripp in a couple minutes from Minnesota, but the great Christian Nunez is with us from the National Organization for Women. Christian, you were active in Georgia as well, and we're thrilled to have you on the call, and we'd like to hear what you got to say about Georgia and for Ray.
Well, I'm really just here to uplift Ray today and the work that Ray and the NAACP has done because, you know, I mean, it just was amazing grassroots work that the NAACP has done. Now it's a grassroots organization, but I really just really want to uplift their work. I think that they really demonstrated what true grassroots work is. And as he clearly stated, they took it back to the core basis of grassroots movement, with really taking it to the people and mobilizing and, you know, going to where the people were at and making sure that they were connecting with people, where people were at in that moment. And I think that's what made the Georgia Senate runoff effective and successful, was making sure that not only, like, they did the food runs, they did the going into the communities, they did the walks, they did the different areas. And I think that's where I think a lot of grassroots movements have failed to do, and I think we saw success in Georgia because NAACP and all the collaborative partnerships that they had made sure that they made that effort to connect and collaborate and connect with all organizations on the same wave in solidarity, and I think that's what made it very successful. So I just want to say that's really, I think, way to be successful in other places, whether it's North Carolina, South Carolina, or other places, is make sure that we are all moving in solidarity together in our movements, and together in all our coalitions, versus trying to do things separately. I think that's what made it so successful. As Ray clearly stated, you know, we have a local chapter in Georgia now, and they were very involved on the ground. We have our state president, Vera Triana, and so Arnold James, and so they were very, very active and engaged in the different organizations off there. And so We try to just encourage them to stay active as much as possible. But we just want to just uplift the work that was done there as another grassroots organization, and just encourage everyone else as you do grassroots work to make sure that you're in coalition and in solidarity with the organizations to understand what their people need. So I think that's super important that we're doing that as well.
Well, I just saw a flash on my email from the Progressive magazine, which is a great friend to voter rights. And it's cited that the unions were critical also in Georgia. Ray or Christian, you want to comment on the role of the unions in this race?
Ray, do you want to comment on that? I don't really know too much.
The unions have been very strong, absolutely. Even in Georgia, which is a right to work state, and have provided a lot of support, both in terms of human resources as well as financial resources. So there's no, absolutely no doubt about their involvement, and of course they've supported us through some of the IT infrastructure that has been put together that we put to good use in this. So yeah, they are always very strong in these kind of races. Absolutely.
Good. And we also had unique participation from the indigenous. There was an indigenous group based in the Dakotas, actually, that was calling into Georgia. They've been on our calls, and I don't see Tatanka on today, but we'll get him on Monday to go through that as well. And Henny Tripp, you're in Minnesota, where Minnesota set the bar this year for the presidential election in terms of turnout. Do you want to tell us about what happened in Minnesota and how it would apply in our future organizing?
Thanks, Sluggo. And I really do want to uplift the McClendon model, and we need to repeat that in other states and also the NAACP's in other states, and now is the time. I wanted to uplift the Minnesota elections because the 2020 November elections had 79.96% of eligible voters voting. So that's number one in the country. And we have always cast our vote on paper ballots. Now, there's special equipment that, you know, used to count ballots, and I'd like to see more information on that when I can get to it. We are nonpartisan, but the Democratic Party had 10 times more votes than the Republicans in Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's what brought it blue. Now, St. Cloud was only, where I am, was only two times more. And then in the rural areas, majority were for Republicans. So, you know, we've got that to work with and challenge in terms of how we want to look forward. And then there's a lot of other pieces, and I think that's the main thing, Sluggo. And I'd like advice, actually, on maybe I can contact the Secretary of State here. Do we want him to come on at some time during the year and talk about it? Or what do you think, Sluggo?
Yes, absolutely. And Bob Fetrakis, our co-convener, was actually Bob, what was your relationship with Keith Ellison, Bob Fetrakis?
He's the Secretary of State, though.
Well, Keith is the Attorney General, right?
Yeah, and Keith I know Ellison. Keith. Yeah.
So Keith Ellison was Bob's student at Columbus State Community College. So we know Keith Ellison, and we could maybe get him. Bob, what do you think on one of our calls? It would be very cool.
I think it was Wayne State that.
Was it Wayne State?
Bob came in. I don't know where he is now.
Okay, he's probably. Well, anyway, so we can get to Keith Ellison, who should have been the chair of the Democratic National Committee, as a matter of fact. But, you know, one thing that, and this is, again, nonpartisan, but in the course of reading on Joe Biden's appointments, there was a very detailed an angry analysis of his appointment of Vlasic, to be Secretary of Agriculture. And the point of the article was that somewhere along the way, and this is, of course, relevant in Georgia and all the other states, the Democrats just wrote off rural America. And this guy Vlasic, I can't remember his first name. I think it's Tom. Just is a total corporate hack. And by putting him in as Secretary of Agriculture, the Bidens turning their back again. This guy was Secretary of Agriculture for the entire two terms of Barack Obama, and completely alienated the rural America. Very corporate, pro Monsanto, did nothing for black farmers. And it's, no, it's not the pickle guy. Or maybe it is. I don't think so though. He's originally from Iowa, and he's a corporate hack. And what grassroots organizing has to happen, you know, we're most of what our focus has been on grassroots organizing in the urban areas. What Daniel Blackman seemed to bring to the campaign in Georgia, Ray, you might comment on this, is he had a very strong rural focus. And it may be that he was a significant factor in bringing the rural vote out among the black community. Is that accurate to say, Ray?
Ray's
well, he certainly off. he certainly had some activity there, but there have been grassroots efforts from some of those other organizations that I talked about in some of those smaller rural areas. There's a Black Belt in Georgia, and it runs from Southwest Georgia up to north central and on the east side of the state. And there are a couple of groups that have been very active in those that have major activity and major or major influences in those areas. One, again, going back to the Divine Nine members, also the Masons, and then there's a group particularly active in Southwest, which is the Southwest Georgia Project. Some of you may have heard of Shirley Sherrod. She was with USDA, and she made some very strong truth to power comments a few years ago, and ended up losing her job about it. But anyway, she's an icon in the Southwest part of the state, and has been organizing about 15 counties that are predominantly black counties for a decade. We partnered with them. So the point was we went and dealt with people who were the leadership in those counties and said, tell us what you need. Tell us how we can support you so that we can all work together. And that's the kind of energy we brought. And that's to that point. And of course, other groups like Center for Common Ground and Reclaim Our Vote and Black Voters Matter were also very active in some of those smaller, more rural communities. But there's been organizing that's going on before Stacey Abrams and before others. There had been a groundswell that got started 4, 5, 6 years ago and really emerged along with Trump getting elected president in 16, and it accelerated.
Well, it's very interesting, man. And you know, that the whole rural dynamic is got to be looked into for our grassroots organizing. There is one additional factor with Daniel Blackman. He did not face the kind of opposition specifically he did face a specific opponent that the two Senate candidates did not, which is from the nuclear power industry. Because the two reactors scheduled to come online in Georgia, $30 billion, he was going to have a say in looking at that. And I guarantee you there was a ton of money that came in from the reactor industry to defeat Daniel Blackman. So it's a pretty amazing he got as far as he did. Hetty, did you want to add something? Hetty Tripp?
Yes, thank you. Just one thing on Keith Ellison when he was running for attorney general here in Minnesota. I asked him point blank if there was anything that we need to know about sexual issues, assault or harassment or anything. And he basically told me no. And I think that's a question that we have to ask any legislator that we support, you know, from either side, whatever. But that's a question I anyway ask. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Harry.
I'd like to. Harvey, did you have a question? This is Bob.
Yeah, I wanted. Well, Hetty brought up bringing on the Secretary of State of Minnesota, and I mentioned Keith Ellison, who was your student, I guess, at Wayne State. So let's hope some more of your students turn up in major positions in state governments. There's one other issue I want to bring up, very, very important, before we move on to the festivities that happened in Washington yesterday, which is the question of paper ballots in Georgia. Ray, my understanding is that the state legislature in Georgia is moving to curtail the mail-in ballot dimension to the elections there. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. It was passed by a Republican-controlled legislature in 2005, I believe it was. And it really hasn't been a problem until, again, people of color and folks that are non-Republican started using it in earnest, of course, because of a pandemic right now. So with that being the case, both the Republican-controlled state Senate as well as the Secretary of State have both come out suggesting that there should be major revisions to no excuse mail-in voting, which they intend to curtail. So it looks a lot more like much more restrictive states like South Carolina. This will have a devastating impact. That's one of the reasons why the normal voter suppression of long lines on election day did not occur, because so many people have voted either mail-in or early voted. And so the lines on Tuesday were more like 5 to 10 minutes as opposed to 6, 7, 8 hours. So it made a big difference. That's going to be our first fight in the new year. The legislature is going to open up. It's supposed to schedule next week. It might be pushed back a week or two because they're trying to get all of the legislators vaccinated before they open up session. But one of the first big things on the voter suppression front we're going to attack is the any curtailment to mail-in voting.
So mail-in voting, the law in Georgia has been that if you apply for a mail-in ballot, you get it?
Yeah, no excuse mail-in voting. All you had to do was just say you wanted it.
And how would you, did you have to send in a form? What did you have to do?
Yeah, you have a mail-in ballot application form, and that's all you had to do. There was no requirement, no need to say why, no age requirement. No, again, it was completely no excuse, and it's been that way since 2005. Now, all of a sudden, because of all of the activity from Trump and Giuliani and that whole crowd, now it's come under attack. And any of the potential issues they might have could easily be resolved without dramatically curtailing the use of mail-in voting. But since it's become a major way that Democrats have in the recent years have used it much more effectively and widely than Republicans, they want to get rid of it.
Hetty, in Minnesota, how did you get your ballot?
Hold on. Your vote from home It means an absentee ballot system, and all you need to do is apply for it, and then it is sent to your residence once they identify your identity. Then you fill out the absentee ballot. It includes personal, it includes address, birthday, and either driver's license or state ID or four digits of your social security. And then each one is unique, and you can follow if it has arrived and whether it's going to be counted. That's what I did.
So over the next 4 years, we have to look at the, I mean, you know, in Nevada and California, they just send, if you're registered, they just send you a ballot. You don't have to apply. So we're going to be looking at in great detail on Monday and for the next 4 years. But Ray, we want to put out a guide to the nitty gritty of grassroots organizing.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you an example. I was on the phone with some South Carolina voters today, and I was asking them about what their mail-in voting looks like. And they have 17 requirements in order to get a mail-in ballot.
No wonder we get the likes of, well, we won't go into that. Okay. Myra Reason, you got a hand, and then we're going to wrap this unless anyone else has a question about or comment about Georgia and grassroots organizing. We're going to continue with this on Monday as well. Myra, did you have a hand?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly add that I heard an interview with Rep. Rab this morning from Pennsylvania. He's in the Pennsylvania legislature. And he described a very similar dynamic happening in Pennsylvania that you just described, Ray, that it had been a very common to have mail-in ballots, but now that Democrats seem to be using them more effectively, the Republicans are trying to suppress the vote and take back their initial endorsement of or support for mail-in ballots.
Well, this is going to be critical. This is at the core of the fight for election protection, and we're going to move on with that. I did want to mention one thing, Hetty. You asked about the machine. The machines in Georgia, the Dominion machines, were ballot marking devices. But there are also ballot scanners, and the great expert on scanning machines, John Brakey, is on with us. And, those we generally endorse. If you have a paper ballot, it comes in, we actually do want them scanned because the scanner will provide a ballot image. It'll be, give you a quick vote count. And it's the, John, you can describe it. I mean, we've been working on these and endorsing these all along. So they're not to be confused with the ballot marking devices, which we totally oppose. But the scanners at the tail end of the process are actually a major plus. We've been advocating hand-counted paper ballots, but the scanners can be reliable, and then you still have the paper ballots for a hand-counted recount. Is that right, John?
That is exactly the case, and these machines don't work. They don't unless they count the ballot by taking a picture of it first. And so if it's generated in the chain of custody, it must be preserved, especially in the Dominion system on the vote by mail. That is actually imported into the EMS, the election management system, where a digital scanner at a precinct, sometimes they'll separate the votes out and not send the images in, leave them on the card. The next election, they destroy them. In Arizona, they have to import everything into the database. Now,
okay.
And keep it.
So that, not to be confused, the Dominion ballot marking devices, we don't like those. The scanning machines, that's a different story. Lynn Finneman, and then we're going to go to yesterday's celebration here. Lynn Finneman, am I missing you here?
Yeah, it's Feinerman.
Yes.
I actually asked this to Ray privately. You know, I phone banked Ray both for the general in June and July and also the runoff. And so many people, a lot of people had already voted, but in the runoff, but so many people asked to be taken off those phone bank lists because they were being called too much. And I'm wondering if there's some way that, you know, I was with NextGen, and previous to that I was with Common Ground and Andrea's Reclaim Our Vote. And there's so many of them doing it. And I think somehow people are, I'm wondering if that's the most effective way to go about it.
I certainly understand that issue. The challenge we have is that what I talked about earlier is that you need to have a system where people are collaborating and people are working off of similar platforms, which then reduces the redundancies. And unfortunately, we had so many different people that were involved independently that you were getting tons and tons of calls. And that's something that we've got to do to in the next round in 2022, or really even coming up this year for municipal elections. We've got to do a better job of coordinating with everyone and doing really low and moderate propensity voter outreach. You know, I've shared the story with a lot of folks, which is that, you know, my wife and I haven't missed an election, you know, in a decade virtually. So why are we getting a whole lot of cards and mails and all of this stuff? You're chopping down trees for nothing, sending us a lot of mail. But that means that somebody is not doing the filters in their databases to make sure they're reaching and targeting the right voters. You don't need to talk to your super voters, those who are going to come out, and I'm in that demographic. So that's a part of what we have to do. A lot of people were just copying lists and sending out lists with no filters. And if you're just doing phone banking, you don't know who has curated your list. And so we got to do a better job of educating the designers of the systems so that we're only focused on those folks. And when you're a volunteer, you're not getting abused because people are getting called every week.
All right, man. We're going to keep discussing that. This is really getting into the nitty gritty of what we need to do for the next 4 years. And let's talk now. We have about 5 minutes left with PRN. If you're listening to this on the Progressive Radio Network at my Green Power Wellness Show and you want to stay with us, go to grassrootsep.org and look at the our upcoming Zoom com and get the link. It's also electionprotection2024.org. If you're with PRN, we're going to sign off in a couple of minutes, but we're now going to jump in. And Christian Nunez, is there anything else you want to add about the grassroots before we jump into the attempted coup d'etat?
No, I think it was greatly covered.
Okay, great. Well, I think so too. It's a beautiful primer in grassroots organizing, and this is a foundation we're going to be working on for the next 4 years. Okay, Bob Fitrakis, you're the one who called me yesterday morning, and you know I'm on California time, and I sleep in anyway because I work late. You're the one who called me and told me that the Capitol was being overrun, and you and I have written a lot of history together. Has there been anything like this since the War of 1812, and what do we do about it? Bob Fitrakis, you with us there? All right, I think Bob may have stepped away. Oh, no, you're there. Bob?
He's there, but he's muted. I don't know. They're at,
all right, listen, who wants to lead off?
Okay. Harvey?
Yeah.
Pete. Fine.
Real quick.
It looks like there are, in terms of remedies, there are only two of them, one of which looks like it's not going to happen. Actually, there are three remedies. One of them isn't going to happen either. The remedies are either invoking the 25th Amendment, which looks like it's not going to happen, or impeaching and convicting him. The question is, the substantial risk it appears the country faces for the next 12 plus days, if he is allowed to continue to maintain the powers in office of the presidency.
given the attack, what looks like a violent and armed attack on the operation of the United States Congress and on the hand counting of the hand-marked paper ballots cast for president.
Okay.
That's what he did. I mean, people could argue about, you know, well, gee whiz, how could anybody expect that given what he had said and has said for the last 5 years and the last, since this election season has started, but it seems like there's a, one might say, arguably at least, a reasonably close connection between what he said and what a number of other people said at that, it looked like a campaign event yesterday. And
there was a rally of some sort, and there were quite a few people there, and they seem to have taken them. The question that's being raised, and please put up your hands now, we're in open
session. What's the question, Harvey?
The question is, what happened to the Capitol Police? I mean, I have been to the Capitol many times, and they basically strip you down to get into the Capitol building. And at this point in time, it's a real wonder what happened. Listen, we are almost out of time with PRM. We're going to continue.
That wasn't happening yesterday, Harvey. If you take a look at the available tape, that was the usual magnetometers and stuff were not in use as people came in particular when they came in through the windows they had just broken.
Yeah. First, I want to say thank you to Ray McClendon. I don't know if you can stick with us, Ray.
I want to say thank you to Ray also for the two successes on Tuesday.
Yes, magnificent.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks to all of you for your support.
We'll be talking about this again on Monday. Remember, we'll have a regular Zoom call on Monday. Same link. All of you listening to Progressive Radio Network, my show, the Green Power and Wellness Show, thank you for being with us for this hour. This discussion is continuing now for another half hour at least. And we'll be if you want to link on, go to grassrootsep.org and find the link under the upcoming Zooms. Also, Election Protection 2024. We usually go out with the Pete Seeger song, but today we will not be doing it. Thank you, Jesse, in New York, for making this happen. Mike and Steve are in.